It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price, cornered and killed.
Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is dead.
That is our top story at noon. We're learning more today about the death of the head of ISIS one day after President Trump announced that Baghdadi died in a U.S. military raid in Syria.
The thug who tried so hard to intimidate others spent his last moments in utter fear.
Baghdadi killed himself after being chased down a dead-end tunnel. It was indeed a dead end for him. Pentagon correspondent David Martin.
A team of about 70 American commandos led by the Army's Delta Force assaulted the compound in northeastern Syria in a violent raid that began Saturday evening, East Coast time. Two Americans were slightly injured. Five of the people around Baghdadi were killed. Others were brought out as prisoners.
David Martin at the Pentagon. President Trump says U.S. forces also able to collect highly sensitive information on ISIS during that raid. Military analyst Sandy Winnefeld.
This is a real treasure trove, and it'll tell you their networks, how they get their finances, how they communicate with each other. It's all very important at both the strategic, operational, and tactical level.
Now they've got a huge amount of intel. They're probably conducting other operations as we speak.
Brett Velikovich, a former special ops intelligence analyst, he says the death of Baghdadi, a military miracle.
When you have to follow guys like Baghdadi through Syria, look, that's a non-permissive environment. So a lot of the intelligence collection is done from the air. So Baghdadi had multiple drones following him around, looking at him from different angles, watching every single movement, meeting, person he met with, all leading up to this raid on the compound there. And so it's very meticulous work. But the fact that they were able to follow him around for 2 weeks is pretty incredible. You don't really get many chances like that.
One of Baghdadi's wives and a courier provided the intelligence that ultimately led to the death of the world's most wanted terrorists. Baghdadi's remains have now been buried at sea. President Trump saying today he may release parts of the video showing that raid. As for why he didn't tell members of Congress about it, Mr. Trump says he didn't want to compromise the mission.
We were able to get in. It was top secret. It was kept. There were no leaks, no nothing. The only people that knew were the few people that I dealt with. This is a very small group of people that knew about this. We had very, very few people. A leak could have caused the death of all of them.
The president says he kept the mission secret to save American lives. That mission, by the way, named after slain U.S. aid worker Kayla Mueller. The 26-year-old from Prescott, Arizona, was murdered 4 years ago after being captured by ISIS while leaving a hospital in Syria. Scorched earth in California, that is the other big story at noon. A state of emergency up in the Golden State as hurricane force winds fan the flames of a massive wildfire in California's wine country.
We've evacuated close to 180,000 people, plus or minus, and people are being evacuated all throughout the northern part of the state.
Dozens of wildfires now burning on both ends of California. Cal Fire's Jonathan Cox.
We're still in the heat of a battle that's really in control by Mother Nature, is the best way to put it.
Sonoma County Sheriff Mark Asix says the winds there, unprecedented.
Here in California, Sonoma County, we do not see winds like this.
And in Southern California, wildfires broke out, forcing thousands to flee their homes in the upscale community of Brentwood, including L.A. Lakers star LeBron James. City Councilman Paul Koretz.
If you're in the mandatory evacuation zone and you're still there watching this, you're an idiot.
More than 100 homes have been destroyed on both ends of the state. Police in Dallas say shots fired at a vigil last night for the victim of a shooting the night before. Kevin Berry Jr., one of two men killed at a homecoming party in Greenville, Texas. Police say they're having problems with the investigation because no one is talking.
I don't know if they're afraid. If they're afraid of being retaliated against, we really need people to come forward.
The investigations into both shootings continue. President Trump in Chicago right now talking to the nation's top law enforcement officers. It is his first stop to the Windy City since taking office.
Joined by thousands of amazing law enforcement leaders, people that I know, people that I love, people that I respect, who defend our communities chase down criminals and keep America safe.
Chicago's police superintendent, a no-show today, citing political differences with President Trump. The city of Chicago has the worst crime rate of any major city in all of America. School kids in Chicago heading into a third week of no class. Teachers there still on strike. Mayor Lori Lightfoot.
We are enormously disappointed that CTU simply cannot take yes for an answer.
Union head Stacey Davis Gates says there's still a large gap between the two sides.
Class size protections for only one-third of the entire city. One-third. Now that's an achievement. And it's not enough.
Teacher pay and health care, the other key sticking points. There could be lots of hungry kids at school all across the country under a plan to cut the number of people who get food stamps. Here's correspondent Vicky Barker.
The Trump administration calls those fears overblown, but advocates say nearly a million kids from low-income families would lose automatic access to free school lunches under President Trump's proposal to limit who can get federal food stamps. Another 500,000 will be eligible only for reduced price meals. And USA Today notes families whose kids are eligible for either will have to apply individually instead of being approved automatically, placing a new bureaucratic burden on schools.
That's Vicky Barker reporting. The longest serving African-American congressman in history is dead. Michigan Democrat John Conyers passed away at his home yesterday. He was 90. Conyers resigned 2 years ago after allegations of sexual harassment. The Houston Astros won a win away from their second World Series title in 3 years. The Stros beat the Nats last night in Washington, D.C. President Trump at last night's game. He did not get the welcome he wanted.
Chants of lock him up and boos as the commander-in-chief was introduced at World Series Game 5 at Nationals Park.
That's Deborah Rodriguez reporting. Still to come this Monday, wicked winds in western New York, the opioid crisis in Pennsylvania, and stuck in a hole in Pittsburgh.
Good afternoon. All is quiet on the weather scene now and should stay that way for another day or two. I'll be back with forecast details coming up. We'll look for you in 10 minutes.
Thank you, Kevin Williams, checking the stories, making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania, Monday, October 28th. Officials assessing the damage from yesterday's wild winds in western New York. Strong winds kicking up massive waves up and down the Lake Erie shoreline. Rick Hilleman is with Buffalo Sailing Adventures.
Luckily, they pulled the docks out 2 days ago. They pulled all the docks out. They would have been definitely been damaged. I don't ever remember it being this high.
The city police in Dunkirk issued a travel advisory on Sunday because of the high waves and high winds. Scattered power outages also reported all across western New York on Sunday because of downed trees and power lines. Two people dead following a two-vehicle crash happened on the south side of Buffalo on Sunday. Police say a 33-year-old male driver and a 32-year-old female passenger killed after their vehicle was hit by a Maserati. The investigation continues today. The FAA is investigating after a small plane crashed at the Leroy Airport in Genesee County, New York. Yesterday afternoon, a family of four on board, they all suffered non-life-threatening injuries. This guy, the owner of that airport.
I was notified around 318 today that there was an airplane crash at the airport. There were injuries. Four, and they've all been taken to the hospital.
The pilot of the plane, 48-year-old John Yates, and his wife and two kids expected to be okay. Officials say the plane failed to take off and hit an embankment at the airport. It is the first accident there in about 10 years. A Pennsylvania politician has introduced legislation to ban gay conversion therapy. Democrat Brian Sims thinks faith-based solutions to sexual identity and orientation issues amounts to a form of child abuse. Pro-family forces fear such counselor coercion efforts violate the right to free speech. Governor Cuomo wants to take his controversial SAFE Act legislation nationwide.
Ban assault weapons because you do not need them. Ban high-capacity magazines. Do a full background check on everybody before they buy a gun.
Cuomo says New York's tough stance on guns should be implemented in every state in America.
Do a mental health database where we now have 100,000 people on our mental health database who before the SAFE Act could have walked in and bought a gun. Think about that. 100,000 people mentally ill who could have bought a gun.
Recent polls show the SAFE Act is popular in New York City, but is still very much unpopular everywhere else in the state. The kickoff to curb a crisis in the Commonwealth began today. Family Life's Brendan Dixon.
Today begins the PA Statewide Overdose Crisis Seminar. The two-day event promotes harm reduction and a safety-first approach to the epidemic. Nearly 5,400 Pennsylvania residents died of overdose in 2017, the highest number in the country and more than double the national average. Advocates, government officials, and clinicians will come together in the state capitol the next couple of days to discuss cutting-edge research and evidence-based solutions. Their immediate goal is to expand access to sterile injection equipment, naloxone, and other harm reduction-oriented services throughout the Keystone State. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. A new report from Common Sense Media shows 8 to 10-year-olds now spend an average of 5 hours a day in front of a screen. For teenagers, it's almost 7.5 hours a day. Those startling statistics don't even include the use of screens at school or for homework.
Screen time really matters in a child's development because it's time spent in front of a screen, not outside, not with your friends. And we've seen major issues around addiction, attention, and distraction.
Common Sense CEO Jim Steyer.
The biggest concern about this major uptick in online video usage is that there is essentially nobody monitoring online videos. I mean, these platforms are not like TV. They are not monitored.
20% of today's 8-year-olds have a smartphone. That's a 10% jump from just 5 years ago. The fall turkey season starts Saturday, this Saturday in Pennsylvania. Family Life's Terry Diener.
Turkey season openers and season lengths vary by wildlife management units. The most significant change in the coming turkey season is that a regulatory change now eliminates the requirement for turkey hunters to wear fluorescent orange. Another significant change is the elimination of fall turkey hunting on the Saturday after Thanksgiving. The short holiday-based season now ends a half hour after sunset on the Friday immediately after Thanksgiving. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. Quite a sight in the Steel City today. The front of a city bus up in the air after a sinkhole opened up underneath it during rush hour this morning in Pittsburgh. Police say one passenger on board at the time suffered a minor injury. That bus was at a red light when the street gave way and the rear end of that city bus plunged into a hole. A woman from Owego, New York, has launched a clothing drive to help those in need stay warm this winter.
I don't want to see any kid have to walk to the bus without a coat.
Sarah Barada says the idea for the winter clothing drive came after a successful swimsuit drive this past summer. She says the seasons may be different, but the need still very much the same.
It would break my heart to watch a child not be able to go and make a snowball or a snowman with their, you know, with their friends because they don't have the proper gear to do that.
And the clothing drive isn't just for the kiddos. Sarah Barada says no one should have to struggle to stay warm in the winter.
I didn't want parents to have to go without coats. I want them to be able to go outside and even just play with their children. And if they don't have coats and that proper gear to do that, they can't.
Barada says donations will be accepted at the police station in Owego all this week. The winter clothes will then be handed out to those in need in Owego, New York, early next month. Let's do sports one win away. The Houston Astros return home tomorrow night, up 3-2 over the Washington Nationals in the World Series. Skipper A.J. Hinch says they're not taking anything for granted.
We know how quickly things can turn where momentum can shift in a series, especially in a series against a quality team like the Nats.
Nats starting pitcher Max Scherzer scratched hours before the first pitch, and a trio of two-run home runs plus a dominant start from Gerrit Cole on the mound proved to be enough for the Stros. Outfielder George Springer says Cole was indeed impressive on the hill.
He gave everything he had on every pitch. For him to do that today, he's incredible.
President Trump at last night's game in D.C., he did not get a real friendly welcome. After being announced and shown on the big screen, the crowd responded with sustained boos and chants of lock him up. The president at last night's game with his wife Melania and 11 members of Congress. NFL action at a wind-whipped New Era Field. The Buffalo Bills fell to the Philadelphia Eagles yesterday, 31-13. Eagles head coach Doug Peterson:
"We needed a win and keep us, in the hunt."
Bills linebacker Lorenzo Alexander says they couldn't stop the Eagles' ground game.
"Yeah, I mean, it's simple. We didn't play good enough today, and then for whatever reason, we couldn't stop the run."
The Bills fall to 5-2. The Eagles improve to 4-4. The NFL's last two unbeaten teams remain flawless as the Patriots and 49ers got late afternoon victories. Bill Belichick earning his 300th win as a head coach, and he did it against the team he got his first win with. The Patriots beat the Browns 27-13. San Francisco 49ers, meantime, off to their best start since 1990 after running over the Panthers 51-13. From the Family Life Sports Desk, I'm Bill Price. Still to come on this Monday edition of the Noon Report, cornered and killed in Syria, wildfires raging in California, and too soon for Christmas.
You're in a conversation and someone says an embryo isn't a person, it's just a bunch of cells. What would you say? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. You should be pro-life. Everyone should be pro-life, not only if they're Christians and see in the teachings of Holy Scripture how God defines life, or in church history that Christians have long opposed abortion. Now, the more we're able to look into the womb and the more we know about embryology, the more we know that every single embryo is a whole distinct valuable human life. But many people, even those pro-life, are unprepared to answer the very common questions we face in this cultural moment about abortion. But we should be prepared for two reasons. First, the answers are out there. Second, lives are literally in the balance. Your hypothetical friend's non-hypothetical question is the topic of the latest What Would You Say video. This new series from the Colson Center equips people to answer the tough questions we face in this culture about life, marriage, sexuality, apologetics, and other faith topics with both clarity and conviction. Here's a segment of our latest video. Pro-life apologist Stephanie Gray offers a What Would You Say response to the question of whether an embryo is a person.
Before we can decide whether an embryo is a person, we have to ask what makes anyone a person. Here are a few things to remember. Our personhood does not depend on our abilities. Some are hesitant to recognize embryos as persons because they don't function in the same way that fully developed people often do. For example, embryos can't think or talk, but neither can someone under anesthetic, someone in a coma, or someone who is asleep think or talk. Newborns can't think or talk the way adults can. Are they still people? Even adults vary in their ability to think and to talk. What we can do does not make us who we are. Our personhood does not depend on our age. The argument that embryos aren't fully persons assumes that our age determines our personhood. But does that make sense? If we have to be old enough to do certain things or look a certain way before we are persons, do we lose our personhood once we are too old to do things? I certainly hope not. If it's not age or ability that makes us a person, what does? Our personhood comes from our nature. To determine what something is, it is helpful to consider its nature, not just its current abilities. It is the nature of birds to fly. If they are too young or injured to do what most birds do, that does not make them less of a bird. While neither an embryo, an infant, or a severely disabled person may be able to think or talk the way we can, the capacity to do so is part of their nature, even if that capacity is undeveloped or impaired. This is why we protect the offspring of endangered animals in the same way we protect their parents. As humans, our shared nature, regardless of our abilities, appearance, or age, gives us equal value.
Stephanie goes on to summarize the points she's made so that just like with every other What Would You Say video, you will walk away fully equipped to answer a tough question in an understandable, trustworthy, memorable, and most importantly, usable way. Come to whatwouldyousay.org, and while you're there, be sure to subscribe to be updated every time a new answer to a new tough question is released. Again, that's whatwouldyousay.org. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 minutes past the hour Monday afternoon. Let's head outside. Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. While there is snow and wind and fire in the west, the weather here in the northeast looks pretty quiet for a couple days as high pressure sees to it that we're fair and dry. Later in the week, though, potent low pressure and an attending front will bring us wind and rain. In the meantime, for this afternoon, a good deal of sunshine and mild, a high in the upper 50s to the upper 60s. For tonight, partly cloudy, low temps near 50. For tomorrow, partly sunny in the 60s and near 70 in spots. Then on Wednesday, mostly cloudy, chance for a shower, some drizzle, mid-50s to the mid-60s, and then wind and rain arriving on Thursday.
Thank you, Kevin Williams. If you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're following for you today, Monday, October 28th, a key win in the war on terror. The head of ISIS, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, killed himself as U.S. forces closed in on his location over the weekend in Syria.
He ignited his vest, killing himself and the three children.
President Trump says Baghdadi's last moments were filled with fear as the world's most wanted terrorist finally met justice.
He was whimpering, screaming, and crying. And frankly, I think it's something that should be brought out.
And the president says he watched the takedown of Baghdadi in real time, and he kept the mission secret to save American lives. A treasure trove of intelligence information also gathered at that ISIS compound. Here's former CIA Deputy Director Mike Morrell.
Any current plots or operations, that's the first thing you look for. The second would be, how is the organization actually working today? How is it communicating with each other? How is money moving? Third, the leadership. Who's in charge? In what position? How do they interact with each other? And then lastly, big strategic plans and intentions.
American aid worker Kayla Mueller died while a prisoner of ISIS 4 years ago. Her father, Carl, hopes those arrested in this weekend's raid have answers as to how his daughter died.
Somebody, and it may be one of these people they've captured, knows where she is. Knows what happened. They know who killed her.
U.S. officials say Mueller was tortured and abused by Baghdadi himself. The operation to take out the terrorist was named after Kayla Mueller. Power outages, evacuations, strong winds. Correspondent Steve Futterman has the latest on California's wildfire fight.
At times, it seems as if the entire state is on fire. Dozens of fires are burning both in the north and south, buffeted by wind gusts in some cases over 100 miles an hour. Sonoma County Sheriff Mark Essek.
Here in California, Sonoma County, we do not see winds like this.
The biggest fire is here in Northern California, the Kincaid Fire. Jonathan Cox is with Cal Fire.
We're still in the heat of a battle that's really in control by Mother Nature.
Emergency shelters have been set up. More than 2 million people are without electricity as utilities intentionally turn off power. We found this woman. She has no power, but has decided to stay despite some sleepless nights.
You know, you have your phone going off, and then everybody imagines that the fire must be right there.
And this morning, another fire has broken out in Los Angeles, threatening homes there.
That's Steve Futterman reporting. President Trump in Chicago right now, talking to the nation's top law enforcement officers.
Joined by thousands of amazing law enforcement leaders, people that I know, people that I love, people that I respect, who defend our communities, chase down criminals, and keep America safe.
And a good day on Wall Street, the S&P 500 trading in record territory.
There is continued progress on corporate earnings. We're in the middle of corporate earnings season, and so that's been helpful. We also are hearing that there could be a small-ish deal announced between the United States and China.
That's business analyst Jill Schlesinger. 25 minutes past the hour. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
And welcome back to another edition of Issues in Education. Mondays during the Noon Report, we spotlight the issues that matter to our public schooling families with the good Dr. Ralph Kerr at the Teaching and Learning Institute in Houghton, New York. Well, Ralph, welcome back to the program, sir. Great to have you today.
Thank you, Bob.
You recently attended the New York State School Board's convention in Rochester, New York. Tell us a little bit about this gathering. What were some of the hot-button education issues that they discussed there in the Flower City?
Yeah, the convention is held each year, and this year there were about 2,400 people there, and some of the sessions were really interesting, one particularly on a topic that we talked about fairly recently, and that was on how to overcome the teacher shortage. That was a real hot-button issue. Then, of course, as you would expect, safety in schools and mental health issues. And then another thing that really is getting a lot of attention right now is how to develop workers for businesses in our communities. Apparently, businesses are really looking at the whole question of where are we going to get our workers from? And we heard a presentation from the president of the Chamber of Commerce in Rochester that said employers may end up leaving the state because of the lack of people who can come to work every day and know how to learn.
Wow.
So that's a real challenge for school boards.
Well, a lot of important issues there that you discussed. Let's leave high school for just a second and head to the college setting, Ralph. Back in the springtime, the president signed an executive order to withhold federal aid to schools that don't protect free speech. This is a big debate. In fact, there's a film coming out called No Safe Spaces that details the far left agenda when it comes to free speech on college campuses. With that said, how do you counsel a parent when it comes to making a choice for higher education for their kid? Do I automatically say my child's going to a Christian college? How would you counsel that parent that's faced with that decision today?
Well, I have a real bias here, and obviously all the research says that in the secular colleges there is a lot of liberal bias on the part of the professors. And so I certainly would counsel people to take a really good look at Christian colleges. I know in my own case, all three of my children went to Houghton College, as you did.
Yeah.
And while I think we have to wrestle with the fact that Christian colleges can be really expensive, there is assistance available. And I would encourage people to take a look at that. That's not to say that, you know, the Christian colleges are perfect, or that they don't have some professors that might be more liberal than we would like them to be. But I think there are at least opportunities for continued Christian growth in that kind of a setting, and that would be my counsel.
All right, great advice there, and let me give a thumbs up to Houghton as well. Wonderful school, and there's a lot of others too, but Houghton is definitely right up there. Well, Halloween is this Thursday, Ralph. I'm sure you weren't expecting this topic, but it's a great discussion. But how do you counsel parents, especially parents of young kids who are conflicted about whether or not to let the little ones dress up for Halloween?
Well, you seem to have a constant knack of leading me into really controversial topics, and this is certainly one, but you know, I'm just speaking personally now. I don't see anything wrong with young children dressing up maybe as an angel or in an animal costume. Let them participate. Lots of elementary schools have great parades, and the kids really enjoy that, and I think if it's done carefully, you know, I certainly wouldn't recommend wearing a witch's costume or the devil or anything like that, but I think it can be done tastefully. And it does save the children being isolated.
Finally, a little less controversial, but very important. There's a study out that shows 4 in 10, less than 4 in 10, 38% of kids today are involved in youth sports. And by the time they get to ninth grade, 70% of kids drop out of youth sports altogether. I know, Ralph, when we look at the obesity epidemic in our kids today, this has got to be very concerning to you.
It really is. And I think it's really tragic because there's so much good that can come from participating in team sports or even individual sports in terms of discipline, regulation of your time, and teamwork. Now, I know there's a real decrease in participation in football because the parents are concerned about the injuries, and rightfully so. But there are lots of other sports that are offered in high school that can be less violent, but can still speak to some of those areas of discipline and certainly keeping kids in shape, which is it's a real problem today with obesity and I'm sad to see that, and I hope that parents listening will rethink that. Not every high school student is going to be a D1 athlete, but there's still lots of benefits from participating in a team sport.
I always used to say I learned so much more about life on the ball field than I did in the classroom. get those kids involved in sports. Ralph, you've got a wonderful website. If folks want to know more about the Teaching and Learning Institute, where can they go?
Thanks so much for the opportunity, Bob. It's simply whyrun.org. Byron.org.
Great show today, guys. As always, it's called Issues in Education Comes Your Way Mondays during the noon report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. While there is snow and wind and fire in the west, the weather here in the northeast looks pretty quiet for a couple days as high pressure sees to it that we're fair and dry. Later in the week, though, potent low pressure and an attending front will bring us wind and rain. In the meantime, for this afternoon, a good deal of sunshine and mild, behind the upper 50s to the upper 60s. For tonight, partly cloudy, low temps near 50. For tomorrow, partly sunny in the 60s and near 70 in spots. Then on Wednesday, mostly cloudy, chance for a shower, some drizzle, mid-50s to the mid-60s, and then wind and rain arriving on Thursday.
Thank you, Kevin Williams. Finally at noon, how soon is too soon to start playing Christmas music? It's a question Rob Lucas at Star 102.5 in Buffalo gets all the time.
I hear about it in April, May, June, July, all the time.
The morning jock at the FM station says the issue has actually caused fights in families.
You get a family and the husband likes Christmas music and the wife doesn't, or vice versa. And you'll talk to them in the middle of summer, and they'll talk about the fights they've had over the radio when we start to go all Christmas.
So when is the right time for all the time Christmas music? Rob Lucas says his station makes the switch around Election Day.
It usually ties in with around Election Day. Election Day can be politics, a lot of anger, a lot of negativity, and Christmas music is kind of like the comfort food to offset all that.
Lucas says the station's decision to go all Christmas so early is a solid business decision that usually works for them. That is the world we live in this Monday. As always, thanks for coming along. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.